pre-recorded from his basement. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. I'm your host, Kyle Selagi, and today we have a doozy of an episode. The NFL season is here. Football is back, and the Bills wasn't pretty, but they got out of MetLife Stadium with a W, and they're going to have to go back there again next week to try to do it again. And if they don't do it next week, we're going to have some major issues. Almost didn't do it this week, but they did. So we will talk about that, and we'll also talk about some league-wide stuff, because something that will affect the Bills twice this year happened over the week, so that wasn't good. But we'll get into it here. We'll get into these fine topics, four takeaways from the game, and then just whatever happens along the way. And joining me to discuss this week is Rich Kowalski. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, we wanted football back, and we definitely got Buffalo Bill football back.
We did, yep.
Full stride, yeah. I'm just happy, you know, happy that they won a little bit. It's nice, always good to talk about the positives when that happens, so ready to get into it, though.
Yeah, it's like, it's not until I watch the Bills that I realize I don't really like football. Like, I love watching football, right? Mm-hmm. I watch college football all weekend, regular football whenever it's on, mm-hmm. or professional football, I should say. But then when I'm watching the Bills, I don't know if it's because I grew up rooting for them or just, like, if I have an attachment to the team, and then it's just, like, I don't want to watch this. I can't do this.
Yeah, to make it worse.
I'm so frustrated.
Oh, yeah. And to make it worse for me, too, you know, I'm sitting in my living room watching the Bills game, and then the parody between myself and my roommate who's watching the Chiefs just dominate the Jaguars. It's like, what is it? What is that, an offense? I've never seen that before. I don't know what that is.
I haven't seen that in ages.
It's been 80 years. It's like the Titanic gif. Yeah.
You have Mahomes? We tried it with Manuel. That was fun.
Ooh, beautiful.
Yeah. Little bit of a callback. Mm. And speaking of the Buffalo Bills, before we get into our takeaways from this week's win over the Jets, I'm going to start with a bit of a story, because I kind of met a Buffalo Bill this weekend.
Mm.
Very fun. Very fun. So to start out this story, I'll say that my friend Tizzy is in town from Germany. He came all the way from Germany to Buffalo, New York for a wonderful two-week vacation. So then we were hanging out last week, and then Brad from Bills Wire messaged me on Slack and was like, "Hey, it's my birthday this weekend. We're having a party at 500 Pearl if you'd be interested in coming." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, for sure. Can my friend Tizzy from Germany come?" And he's like, "Yeah, cool." So then I invite him.
Put you on the list.
Yeah, exactly. So we got there, and we're having a good time. We're drinking. We're having a great time. And then Brad comes up to me. I'm quite tipsy at this point when Brad comes up to me, and he's like, "Hey, did you see who's in that, like, cabana thing over there?" And I was like, "No, who?" And he's like, "It's Christian Wade and Tyrell Dodson." And I was like, "Oh my god, this is crazy. We have to go get an exclusive." So then I was joking. So then I go and tell my friend Tizzy. I was like, "Hey, there's Buffalo Bills in that thing over there." And he's like, "What?" And I was like, "Yeah, there's Bills players over there." And he's like, "Who?" And I was like, "Christian Wade and Tyrell Dodson."
And
Christian,
like,
Wade was a yeah, exactly. Who? No. And I was like, "No, Christian Wade was a rugby player in Europe, in England. So you can go over there and say, 'I'm from Europe. I'm a huge fan of yours. Can I get a picture?'" He's like, "Okay, I'll do it." I lose track of Tizzy for like 2 minutes. Next thing I know, Tizzy is in their booth with them.
Oh,
Tizzy
my
had
goodness.
Worked his way into Christian
He's in their
Wade's
circle.
Booth.
Wow.
He's in their circle, and he's like, and then I take a picture of him, and he comes out, and I was like, "What happened?" And he's like, "Oh, I went up to him and said, 'Hey, I'm from Germany. I'm your big fan.'" And Christian Wade was like, "Ah, guten Tag." So
get this guy a roster spot.
Exactly. Get Christian Wade a roster spot. He's bilingual. He likes the fans. And I guess he was at Rec Room last week, too. So he's enjoying the Buffalo club scene, the Buffalo party scene, for sure.
Yeah, the scene.
you hear Bills players embracing the city by tweeting, like, oh, I love Bills Mafia, saying they have the best vans, doing community service. Yeah, no, Christian Wade's embracing the city because he's out on the town 12 hours before a regular season game. Oh, dude, I love it.
It was a practice squad member.
It truly, man, it was great, and an exempt player.
Yeah.
And then here's another thing. So then I was in the bathroom with Tizzy, and again, I'm drunk at this point.
No.
And so then I'm like, dude, I can't believe you met Christian Wade. And then someone, also in the bathroom, was just like, Christian Wade's here. And I was like, yeah, and Tyrell Dodson. And the guy's like, who's Tyrell Dodson? And then I was like, oh, he's an exempt player. You know, then I explained the situation.
What's that?
yeah, exactly. And then somebody just goes, are you Nate Geary? And I was like, no, I'm not Nate Geary. And he's like, you sound like Nate Geary. And I'm like, dude, I'm not Nate Geary. And then eventually, another one of my friends came, and then it's like 1 o'clock at this point. We're going down an elevator. And then that guy is in the elevator. He's like, dude, it's Nate Geary. And I'm like, I'm not Nate Geary.
You should have just rolled with it and just made up stories.
I should have, yeah.
Nate Geary. Yeah. Yeah, that's me.
Dude, it was a night. Shout out to Brad for inviting me to his birthday party.
Absolutely. Wow, that night could have turned... Oh, wow. That's just amazing. I was hoping that when you were in the bathroom, you're like, Christian Wade, and then Christian Wade just walks out of the stall and is like, hi, I'm Christian Wade.
Yeah. Hello, good to see you, too. That would have been great.
Exactly how he sounds like.
Exactly. Well, yeah, he's British. Yeah. Hello, cheerio.
Uncanny. Is that... Well, we have Christian Wade on the podcast today.
Speaking of British accents, we can't do a Premier Rich this week because international
break. But I will like to say, you know, sort of Premier Rich in a way, international break style. Harry Kane did score a hat trick this weekend against the mighty, mighty Bulgaria.
Ooh, good team.
England versus Bulgaria, you know, one of those classic football matchups.
Big rivalry dating back to the 1500s when they fought in wars with each other.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, he scored a hat trick. You know, I mean, two of them were penalties, but let's not talk about that.
It counts.
Hey,
still says three goals.
He's one penalty goal away from tying Frank Lampard, now coach of Chelsea, for the international, you know, England penalty all-time leader at 9. He has 8. Frank Lampard is 9. Who's now in the Premier League in a different way.
Yeah.
Manager, or I think he's actually... his title's coach, which is weird. I don't know why they...
Yeah, coach.
It's different for each team. It's coach, it's title, it's coach, it's manager. It really... it's kind of weird, actually. It's not like
that's
the NFL,
dumb.
Which is just head coach.
Head coach.
Well, yeah, now it depends on your duties. It's weird.
Now even, depending on, like, not really head coach, but, like, just managerial setup, you have, like, president of football ops, general manager, etc.
And then you have someone like Bill O'Brien. That's just the entire Houston Texans.
Exactly.
And that's working out great.
His title is just front office. Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, my God.
His title should just be football.
Yeah, Houston plays tonight, right? They do,
yeah. All right, Saints.
That's what it is. Oh, my... Oh, dude, we're not going to talk about
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the Saints are going to win that game.
Yeah.
Judging by the fact that the Texans don't have a defense aside from J.J. Watt and their linebacking core, I think the Saints might, you know, might be able to handle
that. But they do have Tunsil.
But they do have Kenny Stills.
Oh, my God. Imagine trading your best player. Not your best player. That's... they have J.J. Watt. But imagine trading...
It was a heist.
Yeah, one of your best players for a third, and then trading a first and a second. Was it a 2 firsts or 2 seconds? It was something dumb for Tunsil and Kenny Stills.
They traded 2 firsts and a second, yeah.
Oh,
they're like, no, you need to send us Barkavius Mingo, or this trade's a no-go. A guy that you're going to cut, please send us. Martin's okay. Like, they got two backup guys for Clowney. I'm just still in shock from that trade, and I'm still in shock with the other news going on. You know, with divisional news.
Divisional news. Miami lost 59-10. Lamar Jackson, NFL MVP this year, confirmed.
He's just amazing. And you can take it to the bank. I was kind of hesitant about Marquise Brown. I'm like, maybe Jackson's going to run a lot. And he just showed everyone that he can pass the ball. Granted, it's Miami, so we'll see. Once he faces a relevant secondary in the NFL of a team that isn't tanking, actively tanking. I saw something that a lot of Miami's players contacted their agents after Sunday's game and are looking for any way out of Miami at this point. They said the coaching staff with Brian Flores has been pretty adamant about them not tanking and, taking winning seriously. And I was reading that Sunday's game kind of told the opposite, and a lot of players are looking for a way out of Miami. So, mm-hmm. if you're looking for out of Miami, call Brandon Bean.
Yeah, Brandon Bean. He's always open for offers. Somehow get Xavier Howard here. I don't care how you do it. Get Xavier Howard here because he's very good. But that's just I'm going to get sidetracked. But, like, Brian Flores, I feel like he's kind of trying to do in Miami what McDermott did in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Kind of just like, I'm starting fresh, building a culture.
Yeah.
But McDermott's a good coach. Even when they wanted to tank, they didn't.
Brian Flores, because Brian Flores was just their secondary coach in New England, too. He wasn't, I don't think he was a coordinator.
In his final year when Patricia went. Okay. Yeah.
So not like a huge amount of experience. McDermott was, with the Panthers for at least a few years as coordinator, and a secondaries coach with the Eagles for a long time as well, too. So he has that longevity, but Flores is just like, you were with New England, we want you. it's just one of those things. And
that's how many people get jobs.
It honestly sucks for Brian Flores at this point, too, because it seems pretty obvious now that Miami is tanking and that the season might just be a huge wash for them. And it's just a waste of time and resources when you're a coach and your franchise is, people above you are putting you in a position where you almost have to lose. And that's just got to be such a confidence killer, especially a first-time head coach for someone like that. McDermott saw his way through it. Granted, the Bills, it seemed like the Bills were pretty actively tanking and just ended up beautifully with Tyrod Taylor showing people that he doesn't want to tank. Bucking that idea. That's a totally different situation, though. But Miami, it's hard for me to feel bad for them, because they are Miami and, they've been that hateable team for so long. But kind of feel bad for Brian Flores. He might just be that guy, that gets scapegoated at the end of the year. They find a new head coach.
I was going to say, this could be a career killer.
Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
It could be.
Tua Tagovailoa.
However you say his name.
Tua, whatever. Tua. But then, two of those. Look at Arizona last year. Arizona sucked. I don't know
exactly
if they were
tanking. Exactly what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone knew they were going to suck. I couldn't even tell you who their head coach was last year.
But he is now a coordinator somewhere.
And then he gets fired after a year because a more attractive option's out there, Cliff Kingsbury, and then you get Kyler Murray. So Brian Flores, I think he signed like a 5-year deal. So he could be being told right now, we're committed to you. You're just gonna have to take the bumps this year, and then at the end of the year, maybe I don't know. Like Lincoln Riley is interested in coming to the NFL, and you're like, okay, I want Lincoln Riley and Tua.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but part of me does enjoy seeing Miami fall apart. Feel bad for Fitz too. It's kind of his retirement. And he's getting battered out there. Oh well.
Oh, you can take this one to the bank. Nick Saban's gonna fall in love with Tua, and then he's gonna go back to Miami to coach Tua. Yep.
Go. I don't take that to the bank. I'm not taking that to the bank. That bank's gonna default.
I take all your money out of that bank. No.
But are they insured by the FDIC?
And then let's transition to the better divisional opponent, the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. Look, it's the nightmare scenario. It's the nightmare scenario. Antonio Brown just jackasses his way out of Oakland, clowns his way out of Oakland, and he ends up in New England. The team, I think like a week ago, even a week ago, if you would have said Oakland's going to cut Antonio Brown, where is he going to sign? Everyone would have been like, New England.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Oakland's going to cut him, but if he's going to go anywhere, it's going to be New England, because of course it's going to be New England.
The perfect
And
villain.
Then, hey, the rich get richer.
Yeah.
The rich get richer, and it's... I don't want to say it's not fair, because I mean, it's not like they're... they're doing it legally. It's just... Everything happens. Everything plays out in their favor. It really does.
The NFL did just come out, too. I saw that. Well, maybe not officially come out, but there's a report that they're not going to investigate this situation, that it doesn't seem like there was anything, you know, malicious with Antonio Brown almost instantly going to the Patriots after being released. You know, there couldn't be... A lot of people thought there might have been some tampering charges filed with, you know, Oakland potentially filing those, but it looks like they're going to come out free and clear and end up with a very, very affordable deal for one of the most prolific wide receivers in the game. And it's just unfortunate in a year where everyone was thinking maybe the New England offense could regress a little bit. You know, their defense might have to win them games this year. And then you see last night that just... You know, Sunday Night Football. They just that's
still
not going to be the story. They just are. Their preparation and their game plan is just so head and shoulders above a lot of the teams right now, and especially in the AFC East. You look at Miami and the Jets and Buffalo. Like, the game plan is just unreal for New England out there. They just know exactly the spots and the weaknesses of the opponent so well that they can just pinpoint them and plan against that so easily, where the other team doesn't know how to counter that. And now that they add Antonio Brown to the mix, I mean, granted, his whole situation just made me really dislike him as a person, and it made him seem kind of very, you know, almost greedy in the way that he did it.
Immature,
you know, very immature. A lot of character issues. You wonder if he almost has something wrong with him, you know, maybe taking hits across the middle. I think there was one hit in particular where Vontaze Burfict, I think he just knocked out Antonio Brown. And you almost think after that point, he has been a little irrational and a little bipolar with the way that he's acted outside of football. You know, just almost like a loose cannon in a way that he wasn't really doing that as much before. There was a little bit of tension in the locker room with the Steelers, but after that instance, you know, he's kind of just gone all out there and really seems something's off. And, you know, the way he recorded John Gruden, that's a whole nother issue that I don't know if they're going to look into this, but in California, it's illegal to not have someone else's consent recording a phone conversation like that. So I don't know if John Gruden and the Raiders are going to look into legal ramifications for that potentially, but the fact that he recorded the coach, you know, just frustrated, just... You hear Gruden in the video, if anyone hasn't seen it on YouTube, that Antonio Brown put out. Gruden is just fed up with the whole situation. You feel bad for him. You're like, you know, it was kind of funny at first, you know, seeing Oakland as a circus. And then Gruden just sounded tired. Just sounded over it. I honestly hope they, you know, they have a little ray of hope tonight and on Monday Night Football. Just to, you know, get a little happy news for the Raiders and their fans with
that'd be great.
All that's going on there. But I also heard that their marketing budget was just eaten up right now because all of their marketing focused on Antonio Brown and him being on the team. So now they just have to scrap all of that stuff. The team is losing. You know, they might not be losing a lot of money on his contract. I think he had like a couple million guaranteed at signing. But aside from that, like, they're losing so much money as an organization just cutting Antonio Brown out of their image as well, which is absurd. Happen too often. It just seems so unprecedented right now, the way this
happened. And then, like, exactly. And you look at the Raiders, they're going into Vegas, and you need something. In a town that's as full of entertainment options as Vegas, you need a kind of a face to really get your brand out there. And Antonio Brown, say what you will about his character, one of the best receivers in the league, if not the best receiver in the league. That is a good face to have when you go into a market like Vegas. And like you said, all their marketing was centered around the idea of having Antonio Brown.
I mean, he
that's out the
contract.
Window.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
You planned on him being here for at least a year. And now you have that worst case scenario where he doesn't even play a game and he moves off to a team in the same conference. And
yeah.
Here we go. He's facing the Bills twice a year now. So,
oh no,
it's, you know, on the bright side, the Buffalo secondary against the Jets just looked pretty good in a lot of instances. The third down percentage wasn't too great. You know, they did let up a lot of passes on third down where they weren't quite making the tackles. Levi Wallace was out there not really bouncing off of players a little too much, where it's, you know, Le'Veon Bell, you can't just tackle him high. You got to go low on him. He's going to bounce off it. It's common sense now, but on the bright side, though, you know, the Bills do have a secondary that could hopefully, you know, stifle the Patriots in some fashion to not have them score, you know, 33 points in a game.
Bills are losing twice to the Patriots this year.
It will be the case if the offense can't get going, but it's going to be tough to face them this year.
The Patriots are going to put up at least 30 on everyone.
Because you go into the season hoping that at least one of these games, one of the games at home, you hope that they can at least keep it close. But you add Antonio Brown to the mix, and that almost goes out the window. It's like, okay, you stopped Julian Edelman. You maybe double-teamed
him. Exactly.
Then you got to worry about Dorsett. Then you got to worry about Gordon. Now you got to worry about Antonio Brown. You got to worry about James White. You got to worry about all of these guys. And it's absurd. They have a stable.
How do they keep getting better?
I don't know. What is happening? They just wait. They lie in wait and just are ready to snatch up and an opportunistic situation and make it favorable for them. That's what they've done best the last, you know, 15, 20 years. They've had a dynasty. They just know how they know how to wait, and they know how to, you know, take chances on guys that are safe and good for the franchise. And you'd like to see the Bills start, you know, they're starting to do that now, where you see them going for guys that, you know, are stable and are maybe, you know, get cast out of another situation and end up doing well there. So
the Bill way, it's coming up. Yeah. Well, no, that just sounds like the Bill Belichick way. No, that doesn't work out. But like people are, I've heard some people say like, oh, there had to be some tampering here. No way AB gets a deal done with New England that quick. It's like, no, I wouldn't be surprised if that got done in 5 minutes. Yeah. He gets released. Bill Belichick calls Drew Rosenhaus. Hey, we'd be interested in having him. And Drew Rosenhaus is like, yes, of course. Anyone would like to sign with the Patriots.
Exactly. And all you did was have to give him, you know, really the average going rate for a receiver for a 1 year, you know, 1 year of his contract, about $13 to $15 million right now, maybe $16 million, you know. And you just, it's it. The funniest part about it all is that Antonio Brown didn't want to go on a year to year basis with the Raiders, where he felt that he was going to be, you know, a yearly guy with the way their attitude about him after, you know, the whole debacle with the helmet and the feet and the fight. And he felt that it was going to be a year-to-year basis, and he goes and signs a one-year contract. It's kind of a funny ending to that. Not quite how he expected, I'm sure, but he's going to a team that is almost certainly going to be in the Super Bowl this year.
Yep, I mean,
I don't think that's too hot of a take.
No, it's not. People have been saying for years, since I've started watching football, like that was the whole thing is, oh, the Bills made four consecutive Super Bowls. No one's ever going to do that again. The Patriots are going to do it this year, and it's not even going to be a storyline.
Yeah.
Just because they're in the Super Bowl, it seems like every year, they're going to make it to their fourth straight this year. I don't see anyone beating them in the AFC. So
it's funny. You talk to anyone outside of the United States. I have a coworker that's from England, and you talk football, and they know, you know, oh, the Patriots, they're good. Like it's like it's a fact now almost, you know, outside of the US, the impression is that, oh, the NFL, yeah, the New England Patriots win a lot. It's like the New York Yankees of football in a way.
With that they match. Are.
It's crazy. And it didn't used to be that way.
Not at all. Seriously.
A very struggled past. Struggled a lot. And then all changed.
Yeah, they had they had their banner unveiling last night or whatever, and it started with a Gronkowski spike. Then I was like, oh, I thought he liked Buffalo now. Ooh, I'm sad. Then I saw Drew Bledsoe, and I was like, ooh, a double betrayal here.
I saw some Bledsoe jerseys in the stadium last night, too. You could see in the crowd, there were a couple of Bledsoe jerseys. I was like,
have they come around on Drew now? Are they like, oh, yeah, you were before Tom.
I think
we're
they're
good
okay.
With you.
Yeah, I think they're like, oh, well, yeah, you were a nice guy.
Yeah, that happens, man. Like, I drove by the arena yesterday, and there was, or the Sabres arena, and there was a Danny Briere poster outside.
Wow.
And I was like, ah, time
heals
all
on,
wounds.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Different regime, I guess.
we like Danny Briereno. And my dog's barking in the background, which is a sign that we need to transition.
Yeah, I guess so.
We're 24 minutes deep.
Yeah.
All right. So, Bills win. Week one matchup against the New York Jets. Boring game. But they won 17-16, and my dog needs to stop barking. This is gonna be awful to edit. So the Bills win 17-16. Yeah. Didn't look like they were gonna win through the first three quarters. A very bad game to start out. Bills offense looked inept, defense looked good, and then in the fourth quarter, it all came together. A little bit of a Josh Allen magic. A little bit of the process happened. Culture really showed itself, and Bills get out of MetLife with a 17-16 win. So yeah. We will discuss four takeaways from the game, two per person, and I'll start out here with the defense. We talked all off season long on this very podcast that, hey, the defense is going to be good. It finished second in total yardage last year, and I think it's going to do that again. And it seriously, I mean, in this game, the defense is the only reason the Bills were in the position to win that game late. It kept the Jets to 223 net yards. I really can only think of, like, one bad drive, and that was the drive they scored a touchdown on. The Jets did in the third quarter, and then the two-point conversion to Le'Veon Bell. That was just like, A, how do you not get Sam Darnold down in the backfield and just let him run around and then find Le'Veon Bell? That was something else. That was the point when I was like, I want to turn my TV off. Yeah. And then outside of that, the defense was just stout, especially the first quarter, four first half turnovers. And the defense doesn't allow points, or actually they only had to deal with three because the one was a pick six, but three first half turnovers, and the defense doesn't allow a single point off of them. Granted, if Corey Vedvik was a capable kicker, a competent kicker, they would have allowed a field goal, but yes, competent kicker. There we go. If Corey Vedvik was good, that wouldn't be a talking point, but hey, they did not allow a point off of a turnover, which is very good. And like I said, they kept them in the game. The defense did. Tremaine Edmonds looked very good. Levi Wallace looked good. Trey White, in his rookie season, he had this thing where he would be like not good in the first half, and then like he just turned it on in the second half. It was like he had learned who he was covering, and he you know, got it together. Yeah. And that's kind of what happened yesterday. I mean, I don't think he was mirroring Robbie Anderson the whole game, but whenever he was on a receiver, he looked solid. And then just the pass rush. Granted, the Jets offensive line, that was their first time this year playing all together, but four sacks and nine quarterback hits. Sam Darnold rarely had a clean pocket. They were always generating pressure, and they were sometimes doing it just rushing four, which is really what you want to see. You don't want to have to send exotic blitzes in order to get pressure. If you can generate pressure and give the quarterback a little time just with your four-man rush, you're going to win a lot of football games, because then you've got more guys in coverage, and you're just rushing your designated rushers to generate pressure and ultimately bring the quarterback down. So I really think the defense played well, and I think the defense, you can say Josh Allen, if you want to give credit to Josh Allen for constructing the fourth quarter comeback, or Devin Singletary, but without the defense being as strong as it was throughout the game, they're not in that position. And ultimately, it was the defense that had to stop the Jets late from taking the lead. So I'm going to give this one to the defense. I'm chalking credit up to the defense.
Absolutely. I mean, they single-handedly won that game for the Bills. They put them in a position where they could actually come back and have a chance. You know, you've seen teams in the past where they let up a late touchdown or something. It kind of gets out of reach, and the Bills have to struggle to get back into it. But the defense kept them in that. You know, you see the stats from that game. I mean, 155 passing yards they only allowed the Jets to have. That's 22 yards less than their average of last year, which is huge. When you're not hearing guys like Tre'Davious White's name out there, that's a good thing. You know, he's not on the camera. He's not getting beat. He's not getting burned. The only thing I will say they need to clean up on the defense is the tackling. The tackling was a little bit iffy at times, where he had, you know, a guy like Le'Veon Bell, where you're tackling up high, you shouldn't be doing that. You got to go low on Bell. You got to make contact low so that you knock him off his balance and don't let him to bounce off. Don't let him bounce off you, because he does that so well. That is one thing I would like them to clean up. But the secondary looked fantastic. You saw a lot of times on third down they got beat a few times, but they were able to bounce back and keep the game in such a winnable position after, you know, the offense had unfortunate turnovers. It's fantastic to see.
Yeah, Bell had a few patented Le'Veon Bell runs where you're just knocking guys off of him, but largely they contained him. 60 yards on 17 carries. Le'Veon Bell to that stat line. That's very good.
All I'm thinking about are those. I think he had like 200 yards the one time when he was on the Steelers against the Bills in that snowy game. Ugh, that's like a nightmare thinking about that. And then you have him come back and face a similar defense, a little bit different, but you know, 60 yards on the ground, and he had 32 through the air and a touchdown. But still, you contained their best weapon undoubtedly, and you kept him in check. He only scored a touchdown. That's huge. Need that every week.
Seriously. I thought the defense as a whole played very well. Saran Neal had 7 tackles. That's
huge.
Matt Milano, he in times looked bad in coverage, but then he also had that really big hit, which was fun to see. Mm-hmm. Matt Milano was kind of the weak link in the linebacking core, which is not something you expect to say, but.
I mean, it's even great, too. You saw you were saying the pass rush looked really good. They were getting a lot of pressure and making Darnold kind of panic in the pocket, which is what you want to do with a young, you know, it's his second year in the league, but the new offensive line, you want that. You want to push guys like Khalil to the limit, one of their best linemen. And it was fantastic just to see, you know, Shaq Lawson out there.
Shaq Lawson had
a fantastic game in a year where he really needs to show that he can be that first round pick, you know, that the Bills drafted. He could be that dominant defensive end where there are other guys that they might be looking, you know, towards to take over that spot. And he had a fantastic game. He had a sack, and at least a couple times he got pressure and just wasn't able to, you know, get a sack on it, but forced Arnold to make, you know, throws they didn't want to make. That's huge. That's what you need to do, especially in these early games. You need to get that pass rush going, where you've seen, I think the last few years, the Bills really haven't been able to get the pass rush going and haven't been able to, you know, get the quarterback on the ground. And it's good to get that started and really get that confidence going for guys, especially like Lawson. It's good to see.
Yeah, and that's been something that Sean McDermott has been saying for years, that, oh, they need to be strong up front. That's defensive line and offensive line, blah, blah, blah. But really, the defensive line has never been that great in terms of consistently getting pressure. So I think this might be the year where finally McDermott has the tools that he wants, or McDermott and Frazier have the tools to be able to consistently generate pressure, even if they are just rushing four, which is, and seriously, like Shaq Lawson taking a big step, that's going to play a lot or go a long way in that. Trent Murphy being healthy is going to go a long way in that. I think Trent Murphy, didn't he have a sack yesterday, or at least half a sack?
I don't
know. I'm wrong.
He did have some pressures, though. He did have a lot of pressure on Darnold, and it was good because it was, you know, it was almost like a pressure by committee, which is huge. You have, you know, Darnold is dropping back. Yeah, one guy is great to go after him, but he can move for that. You have guys coming from both sides, or you have guys coming from the front, the left, and the right on him. He's going to panic, and he's going to make errant throws, which, you know, your secondary, you hope is there to make some interception, but if not, get those incompletions and get the ball back to your offense, because they need to score on offense more, and that is going to be something that comes up. Hopefully doesn't, you know, end up hurting them in the future, where the defense plays great, but the offense doesn't quite get there. And we almost saw it on Sunday. We almost saw it where the offense couldn't quite get there, and we got, you know, some great play by a new face.
Yes. Do you want to start your takeaway, or one of your two takeaways? All right, on delay.
Yeah, so it was huge. I mean, you saw these new faces like John Brown just have a fantastic game, you know, 123 yards and a touchdown. And he gets the winning touchdown that ends up putting the Bills over the edge. But, I mean, he had 10 targets, and he's able to haul in 7 of those from Josh Allen. And they were, I mean, he averaged 17.6 yards of reception, which is why you brought someone like him in there. And you saw Cole Beasley, too. He had a fantastic game. He had 40 yards. I mean, five catches on how many targets he had? 9, which is okay. He had the bounce off his chest. You know, that was the interception, which was not great to see. But you can see already that Allen is using him, as everyone's been saying, as a safety blanket. He's the guy where he makes a quick snap route. He's able to turn his body quicker than almost the secondary can react, where he carves himself out a spot and is able to get decent chunks of yardage that the Bills haven't been able to get in the past with guys like Zay Jones. And it was fantastic to see, you know, all these new faces on the offense do great things. You know, Singletary too. He came alive in the fourth quarter and was able to really put the Bills over the edge and give them something different than what they were doing running the ball. You know, Frank Gore didn't have a great game. He only finished 20 yards on 11 carries, which is pretty bad. But he was able to get a few carries, you know, that put the Bills over the edge. And I think he had like a 9-yard carry when they were pinned back deep. But at the same time, Singletary just clearly looks like he's going to be the main guy going ahead. He got the start, and I think you're going to see him getting the start moving forward, and Gore being more of that guy that just goes downfield and gets you out of a situation. But, I mean, all the new faces, though, even Tommy Sweeney, too. Tommy Sweeney had a good game, 2 catches for 35 yards, but he was there when Allen needed him there. You know, he was in the right place, and it was good to see Allen make those throws and a lot of the time make those tough throws, dropping balls into coverage, but with these new faces, it really got the Bills over the hump, and you can see that if they keep developing this, if they keep working towards this momentum, they could do some special things on offense. They just really need to keep this going and to keep that confidence up, and hopefully they can do the same thing next week against the Giants. You know, Giants got kind of run over by the Cowboys, and Dak Prescott kind of minced them up, and if Allen can do that this week, this upcoming week against them in the same stadium, and they can contain Barkley, it could be a really good Sunday for them.
Like you said, just the new additions out wide, I guess, or just play at skill positions.
The new hands.
I mean, yeah, exactly. 7 Bills caught passes yesterday. Let me recount that. 1, 2, 3. Yes, 7 Bills caught passes yesterday. 5 of them were not on the team last year.
Exactly.
So, exactly.
What's up with DeMarco being split out?
Yeah, what is going on
as a wide
there?
Receiver? I was kind of confused by that. I mean, it worked out okay. I mean, he had a 5-yard reception was his long, so he had another one for 4. It was just kind of strange. I guess I could see it, you know, trying to work him into the offense more. He doesn't have bad hands, but it just every time I see him out wide, I think of ball going off his hands like it did against Peterman, and then, you know, with Peterman throwing the ball against the Chargers, and just spirals out of control from there. So it's kind of a a sore spot seeing him as a receiver.
Very true.
But I mean, he did well too. He was utilized. Still hasn't really been, you know, I don't think when was the last time he had a rush?
Oh, I don't know. It's so long ago. But there was some questionable play design, some questionable play calling, but just to go further into the new additions, the offensive line. A lot of people, or I've talked to some people who said the offensive line played poorly. I don't really think they played poorly.
I don't either. They kept a pretty clean pocket a lot of the
they
day.
They did. Allen had a clean pocket. Yes, exactly. And like,
what
you
more
can
you
talk
want?
About the fumble on the 4th and 1 or whatever. That was just miscommunication. That was Quinn and Williams just pushing Mitch Morris before he could even get the ball there. I'm not going to say.
That's a beast on the,
Exactly. And that was one player. That's not necessarily poor offensive line play. But then I was talking to my friend last night, and he said the offensive line was bad. He's like, you guys couldn't get anything going in the running game. That means you have your offensive line played poorly. It's like, okay, they didn't call a rushing play until there was like 40 seconds left in the first quarter. So that kind of could talk about the lack of rushing stats, and that they went an entire quarter without running the football. And then on top of that, they finished the game with 128 rushing yards, rushing that of 128. That's more than the Jets, who were running the ball the entire time, whose best player is their running back. So I don't necessarily think the ground game was poor. I'll get into Singletary in a minute because that's my other takeaway, but I thought, as a whole, the offensive line played well. I thought Mitch Morris played well. And like you said, Allen, there were times when I was just like, he has a clean pocket. He has time to get the ball out here, which is, there were very few times last season where he had, like, ample time to go through his reads. So that was, I called that out a few times yesterday watching the game, where just, like, I saw Allen's head moving and going through his progressions. I was like, oh my God, he has a pocket. He can actually be a quarterback.
This is refreshing.
This is crazy. He can be a quarterback now because he has a line. It was,
I mean, going back to the what you were saying about the Bills not having good blocking, or the offense not being able to, the offensive line not being able to create holes. You look at the touchdown drive that the Bills had with Allen running into the end zone. Bills had a rush of 7 yards, a rush of 23 yards, a rush of 12 yards, and a rush of 15 yards, and then Allen for the touchdown. I'd say that's pretty good blocking to have on a drive where you're, the vast majority of your runs that on a, you know, how many plays was that drive even? That was a eight-play drive. You ran for 60 yards on that drive. I think that's a pretty good offensive line when you're having your a rookie running back being able to find holes pretty easily on that drive. But, yeah, I mean, I'll leave it to you, too, to talk about Singletary. He played fantastic.
Yeah, Allen was only sacked once, and that's given Allen's game, how he kind of likes to try to make things out of nothing to be only sacked once. Too. Yeah, that's good. Devin Singletary, 70 yards on 4 attempts. I don't think he was stopped behind the line of scrimmage once. If he was, it was once. And then Frank Gore, 20 yards on 11 carries. Okay, that's Frank Gore's game. Frank Gore is not going to find the holes and break off a 50-yard run like he did that in the preseason. But just that's not Frank Gore's game. He's put your head down, find contact. So I don't think I don't see the argument that the offensive line played poorly. I really don't. I think the offensive line played well. And this, especially given that this was Mitch Morse's first time playing in a game with them, to see this line playing as well as it did, in my opinion, I think that's very reassuring moving forward. So I will transition here to Devin Singletary, which I kind of want to say he was the catalyst for the Bills' offense, because once they got him going, the offense really picked up. He did not have a run. I don't think he touched the football, or at least he wasn't given a carry until the second half. In the first half, in the first quarter,
I think they had one run by a running back in the first half.
That's insane. I do not. I think Gore maybe had a couple in the second quarter, but in the first quarter, I know they had like a college offense, and it wasn't even like a unique college offense. It was just like, seriously, all shotgun, all passes. It was like, what is going on? Is this is this the offense? And Josh Allen, the first drive, he looked good. Josh Allen did look good on the first drive, and then he fumbled the ball, which was like, ah, that sucks that that drive's going to end like that. And then the rest of the time, the play calling was just weird, and it was just, it was bizarre almost. And then you saw the offense was inept as a result. It was just a poorly run offense, both coaching-wise, and Josh Allen looked bad in the first half. But then in the second half, when they got Singletary going, that offense as a whole, it became a multi-dimensional offense. You weren't just trying to have Allen force balls, and he didn't really force balls, but you weren't putting all the pressure on Allen to make plays. So when Singletary had the opportunity to make plays, and he did make plays, you saw the offense as a whole just start generating more production. And then to see Singletary have 70 yards on 4 attempts, and then 28 yards on 4 catches or on 5 catches, you can see why the team was confident getting rid of LeSean McCoy. And that's something, just thinking about yesterday, seeing how they used the running game and seeing how Devin Singletary played, it makes sense that they were like, okay, if we're not going to really focus on the ground game and we're confident in Singletary, let's free up the $6 million in cap and get rid of McCoy. So so I think after 1 week, it's like, okay, that makes sense why they got rid of Shady. But Singletary, man, he really showcased that agility that made Brandon Bean say that he was the funnest player to watch in the pre-draft process. He had a few just few runs where he just found the hole. He's not the fastest guy, and you can see that, but he's a powerful runner, and he has great vision. He's a patient runner, which is, yeah, and that's that wasn't something that the Bills had last year. So, and you saw that play in the red zone, I can't talk, which is, it sucks being a podcast, having a podcast and not being able to talk, but you saw Singletary, he was near the red zone, and he made a cut. He could have tried to outrun the defender to the pylon, but instead he tried to cut it back inside and take on the defender.
It takes time.
And then but then also the broadcast was like, oh, he should have tried to cut it to the outside. And it's like, Singletary knows he's not the fastest guy. Yeah. I think he realizes I have a better chance of taking this guy on and either juking him out or running him over than I do beating him in a foot race to the pylon when he has the angle. So I didn't necessarily think that was a bad decision on Singletary's part. Mm-hmm. I thought he had a very good game, especially with how he ran, you know, juking past defenders, getting past defenders, running in open space, and then also being used out of the backfield, which is, I think he's going to be utilized heavily in that fashion this year as well. So a very good NFL debut for Devin Singletary.
Absolutely. And going back to when the Bills had their first rush with an actual running back, it came with 35 seconds left in the first quarter. Frank Gore rushed for one yard. Shortly after, you know, on that drive, Devin Singletary had his only pass thrown to him that wasn't a catch. He had six targets and he caught five of them, which is huge for a guy that came into the team. A lot of people were questioning his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield because it wasn't something he really did in college. And he kind of proved people wrong in that aspect, that he's able to catch the ball out of the backfield to make moves and had a decent game doing it. And you add that fourth quarter ability that he was able to close out the game for the team. You know, he was able to, I did like that run, like you were saying, where he could have cut that back to the right. I don't think he gets as much yardage though, honestly, if he's going to the right, because there was a second defender over there where he has to almost wedge between him, so he takes it up the middle, takes his chance with running someone over, which is what you want to see. I mean, we're so used to seeing LeSean McCoy put on the moves and everything, but Singletary isn't that type of running back where he's going to be juking all over the place and running in the backfield. He's going to run straight downfield for you, and he's going to find a good hole. And you saw him do that in the second half and in the fourth quarter primarily, where he was just able to take off and it looked fantastic. It was like, this is why they spent money on an offensive line. This is why they've drafted guys for the offensive line. It's because they want protection, but they also want to add that extra aspect of their game that they didn't really have the last few years with a iffy offensive line. You can blame McCoy or you can blame the offensive line in the last few years, but at the end of the day, it wasn't doing well. And you know, you make those adjustments and you see that it gave Allen a clean pocket and it gave Singletary the ability to, you know, use his talent and perform well. That's great.
I'm very pleased with Devin Singletary. I think he is going to be very good. I think he already is good, but I think eventually, if not now, he will be the Bills' lead back, and I think in a few years from now, we'll look at Devin Singletary as one of the better and probably like a really good modern running back, in that he's a guy who can do a little bit of everything in an offense, whether he's taking balls out of the backfield or going out of the backfield as a receiver. So that'll be good. And I have a theory for you. I'm going to run this by you. So Singletary wore 40 in the preseason. Do you think after they cut McCoy, he went to 26 because he's one better than LeSean McCoy?
No, I think he just prefers the number. I would like to entertain your theory, but I think he does just prefer that number.
He should have kept 40,
though. That
would
be absurd, though.
That'd be crazy.
You know,
yeah.
40 is a classic running back number that, you know, people, as much as people griped about that, like, it's more of a secondary number. It's not really a running back. I mean, there were a lot of classic running backs that wore the number 40 back in the day. It's not a modern running back's number.
Isn't Kamara 40?
I believe so, yeah. No, he's 41.
Ah, look at me. I don't know anything.
He's one better than 40. Heyo. But I'm going to get into my second takeaway, too, from this game.
Oh, yeah. Go with that.
Josh Allen, you know, as decently as he performed, you know, he was safe with the ball. You take away, you know, these deflected passes and off the chest, that interception, those two interceptions. You take that away, he did have a pretty solid game. He did have a good completion percentage. You know, he was 24 of 37, which is, I mean, you saw last year, anytime he had over, you know, 30 plus attempts, he wasn't really performing as well, and he wasn't able to get that yardage and was starting to kind of make mistakes when he was forced to pass the ball a lot of the time. It's good to see that progression this year, where when they do come out with such a heavy passing attack, you know, they don't have a running back running the ball until the end of the first quarter. he's able to handle that. And on the first drive, he handled it so well. It's just unfortunate, these things that happened, where it's just like, of course that happens. Of course that goes off his chest, is intercepted. Mm-hmm. Of course. It's just these little things that, if that doesn't happen, who's to say the Bills don't put up, you know, 14 to 20 more points, you know, with those drives that they had. They looked like very promising drives that just didn't end up finishing positively, that ended up finishing with turnovers. But Alan, it's tough. My takeaway from this game, though, is it's tough to move that ticker forward. You can move a little bit forward with his progression and his development, where he's becoming a more complete passer. You didn't see him taking as many, you know, risky runs with the ball too. He had a couple mm-hmm. where you kind of hold your breath and you're like, what is he doing? Like, if, you know, if Jamal Adams comes down a little lower, Josh Allen's probably getting a concussion on one of his scrambles.
Yeah.
And it, you don't want that happening. And he cut that out a lot, which was nice. He ran the ball when he kind of needed to run the ball. And you saw it nice too. A Bills designed a run play for him where they're, okay, we know you want to run the ball. We know you can run the ball. You're sneaky. I believe it was a third down call where they had, you know, the guard pulling and they had blockers out in front of him where he's able to just sneak forward and have some protection rather than run around unprotected, getting hit, taking shots. It was good to see that though, where they, you know, they're able to utilize both of his abilities with throwing and with running the ball. But at the end of the day, you just want to see him, you know, almost taking a few more shots. He was able to, you know, chip away with some yardage, which was great. Mm-hmm. Seeing that accuracy that everyone talks, you know, it's a huge talking point. Josh Allen, his inaccuracy, when it's not necessarily a thing. You saw some drops, and you saw, you know, that interception was a drop. It was a poor throw, but it was also a drop off the chest. And it, you know, at the end of the day, you look at the stat sheet, you see, okay, two interceptions. It doesn't matter how they happen; they're two interceptions. But
yeah.
Aside from that, he was able to make those smart throws where he's dropping it into coverage and finding the open guy, not just forcing it. There were a few times where, I mean, it was the one where there was a interception that was called back on a holding, but at the same time, it's good to see that he's finding these new faces and is very comfortable with them so quickly. And you hope that he can keep this going along and these guys stay healthy, because right now it's only up from here for him with what the, you know, the targets he has. It can only get better from here. And if Cole Beasley can stay healthy and they can continue to use him and John Brown, then you leave the game open, you know, maybe for later on down the road, Zay Jones, you know, someone decides to double team John Brown, double team Cole Beasley, because mm-hmm. it's a safety blanket. You get these other options out there. You get Tommy Sweeney or Dawson Knox, or when Tyler Kroft is healthy, you get these other options out there, where maybe even Robert Foster, where it opens up the game for other people because you're able to complete those passes. It's promising. But, you know, I really won't, you know, can't move the ticker and on his development much more forward after this game, but it's very optimistic from here.
Yeah, it was, for me, I think it was a mixed bag, and it's mm-hmm. only a mixed bag because of his fourth quarter, because, like I said, that the first three quarters, he was bad. He was really bad. He had a few errant throws, and there were times when he was making good reads. There were times, like you said, when he was getting the ball, dropping it into coverage, mm-hmm. and at the end of the day, I think this may be his best statistical outing as a professional. 24 mm-hmm. completions on 37 attempts, 254 yards and a touchdown, credited with four turnovers, but only one of them was his fault, I'll say. The mm-hmm. rest, he had two picks off of deflections and then a fumble, which I don't even think he touched, but he was credited with the fumble. So,
yeah.
But then just, like, it's so hard just to even, remember the first three quarters just because of the mm-hmm. fourth quarter. I remember yesterday I was in the Slack. Nick Wotan was out for he was in Mexico for
he's
a wedding.
Mexico, yeah.
Mexico. Mm-hmm. I told him today he's
Viva
back.
Viva Los Bills.
Yeah. he's back in, well, New York now. So, but ooh. I asked him, I was like, hey, are you home now? And he's like, yes. And I was like, all right, you can put survived Mexico on your resume. So that'll get him hired some places. But then in the Slack.
Survived Mexico.
Yes, exactly. In the fourth quarter, when they started to come back, we were all just like, we're going to have to just completely scrap everything we're working on because this was an awful game, and now it's, of course, they're going to come back and win this. So, but Josh Allen, the last drive, this is according to Marcel-Louis Jacques, and I guess I have to say according to because this is where I'm reading it from, but really it's just stats. But on the final
if they're
two
wrong,
drives,
it's his fault.
Exactly. And the final two drives, he was 8 of 10 and one for 103 yards and a touchdown. And then he also had the rushing touchdown. So I guess if you want, if a quarterback is only going to play good in one quarter, I want that to be in the fourth quarter of a winnable game. But also, you want that, you want more consistency throughout. And again, I think I'm going to credit some of his struggles to, like I said earlier on, it was a one-dimensional offense early on. I mean, the first quarter, they weren't running the ball. So, and the Jets caught on to that. They were like, okay, we'll make you throw the ball. Beat us with your arm. And he couldn't early on. And then it wasn't until they started getting the ground game involved and they became a multifaceted attack that the offense really started to go. When Josh Allen could only beat the Jets with his arm when the Jets also had to focus on Devin Singletary and focus on the running game. So that was, like, I guess just like you said, I think you said it best. You can't really move the ticker on this because it was such a mixed bag. If the game ended after three quarters, we're sitting here saying, okay, it wasn't a great first game. He did some good things, but overall, the offense was lifeless, and he couldn't really do anything. But then the fourth quarter, you see that connection with John Brown, like the deep ball. Finally, John Brown's doing, or not finally, but John Brown is doing what everyone said he was going to do. He's the deep target that perfectly complements Josh Allen with Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley's that short to intermediate guy that Allen's already has a good connection with. So,
I mean, we should also note too that, you know, in the last few drives of the game, the Jets were without C.J. Mosley, which
that is very
he
true.
Is a huge factor on that defense. He's the leader on the defense. He is a game-changing linebacker. Regardless of that, though, I mean, you saw, and like you said, that John Brown throw, that's to the secondary. That's not towards the middle of the field, you know, where C.J. Mosley has as much of an impact. But it was good. He was able to make an adjustment on that throw. That wasn't an underthrown ball by accident. That was an underthrown ball intentionally because he saw that the defensive back had a beat on him. So he throws the ball underneath where John Brown is able to come back. That's something that they worked on. And that's a good read that you're seeing that. And like you said, if we're judging this off of the first three quarters, you come out and you're like, no, he did okay, not too great. But that fourth quarter presence, you know, he was able to take advantage of the Jets' defense without their leader, without their star linebacker, and you're able to exploit that. That's great. Just got to do it every week, every week against every team that has, you know, more than one C.J. Mosley, probably.
I think it was in the third quarter when they were down like 16 or something, whatever they were down. And then there were like a few plays in a row when they were just taking shots at the end zone. And I was like, okay, they've given up on this game. And that's when Allen, a few errant passes.
I mean, he almost had Brown earlier, too. Was it Mosley as well, too, that got his arm up and block the pass from going right into John Brown's hands that could have potentially been another touchdown earlier in the game, and take that away, and you know, Bills end up winning by 1 point by that extra point shanked.
Oof.
You think they're looking for a kicker?
They'd sign me at this point just to get Vedvik off the roster. But then with
a Scandinavian man.
It is a good name, K-A-A-R-E, and that's Corey. Ooh, okay. But then, just to sum up, ow.
What's going on over there?
I don't know. I just hurt my thumb. I my thumb hit something. Okay.
Guess he can't be the kicker for the Jets now.
I can't. I'm injured day to day.
Can't definitely be the snapper after the poor snap.
That's definitely staying in. Just interrupt myself with ow. But then. But yeah, just I guess, like I said, it's kind of hard to even think about the first three quarters because Allen left all fans with a good taste in their mouth. 8 of 10, 100 yards, a touchdown, a rushing touchdown. So that's the talking point, is that he finished the game well. And look, I just want that spread out throughout the game. Just be consistent. Be consistent with your reads. Be consistent with your placement. You don't have to be I'm not going to say I'd rather a consistent quarterback than an elite quarterback who's only good. I don't know. I don't even know the point I'm trying to make. I just want consistency from Josh Allen. Yeah. I know he's never going to be a 65 or 66% passer. That's not his game. But just, I don't want him overthrowing deep balls. But I will say this. We made a big point of it a few weeks ago on the podcast, is playing the preseason where he rolled out and bounded to the middle of the field, and he threw an interception that was called back. He had a few plays this game where he rolled out and then threw it out of bounds. I was like, very good to see.
He had one of those, but he also did have an almost interception. Rolled out to the right and threw it towards the end zone, and I think it was Jamal Adams almost came up with an interception. I think it was right before they got a field goal. It was great, though. He actually was able to throw it out of bounds and utilize that option of not throwing an interception and playing hero ball.
And he had a few...
Progress.
He had one in particular where he, like, tried to throw it out of bounds and it didn't get out of bounds.
Yeah,
it
was
landed,
kind of
like,
scary.
Right inside.
It was like, yeah, it's like maybe a little more out of bounds. Like,
yeah.
You might get an intentional grounding if you throw it a little further inbounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. And, like, even if it's, like, just slightly out of bounds, a defender can still come down with it and get their feet in. Like, but this ball was in bounds. If a defender was in the vicinity, that was an easy pick. So it's just, I don't know. It's so hard. I've said this 5 times, but it's so hard just to come away with a final judgment just because it was a tale of not even 2 halves. It was a tale of 3 quarters and 1 quarter for Josh Allen. And it was the last quarter. That's the most... you know, present in our minds. So I'm not coming out of this game very defeated, but I'm also not coming out over the moon about it. And I think that's my final takeaway. Just for Allen and the whole game in general. I was saying all off season, I just wrote it in an article too, the Bills Wire staff predictions. The Bills could realistically start out 5-1. And I'll tell you right now, I didn't have that loss against the Jets. The Jets were not that one. So I really thought, I mean, I've been saying all along the Bills, I think they could go 10-6 this year, and I think they really needed a win against the Jets. I thought it would be a bit more, I don't want to say dominant. I think the Jets are a decent team. I think they're too good to be like blown out like the Dolphins were. But I was expecting like, I don't know, 28-21, maybe something in that range. But, to see a 17-16 win and then it only happening with a late comeback, it was scary. It really was. But hey, 1-0 looks the same no matter how you get it. I mean,
the Sunday scaries.
I mean, the Bills record is the same as the Ravens right now, even though the games were completely different. Hey, so nice. It doesn't matter. It's all 1-0. The Bills, I think they needed this win. If they want to be a wild card team this year, they needed this win. It was the first game, but it was a big division game because it could have wild card ramifications down the line. So they needed this win and didn't look like they were going to get it, but they did get it. So do you have anything else to add before we head out here?
No, it'll just be interesting next week. You know, they're playing in the same stadium. Who knows if it's going to be Eli Manning or if it's going to be Daniel Jones playing for the Giants. I mean, I wonder if they go and they get amends ready to make that decision. But they're going to have their hands full again this week, this upcoming game, you know, facing Saquon Barkley. And, you know, it's another dynamic running back that they need to, you know, tackle low and not try to tackle high. You got to knock him off his center of gravity. And maybe, you know, if they are able to stifle that part of the game, the Bills should be able to win the game.
I hope so. I wasn't going to say I hope so, but then also it's more fun to talk about the Bills when they win. Because
absolutely.
Then, I mean, look, if they lose to the Giants, that's just, I mean, they almost lost to the Jets, and then the Giants are much worse than the Jets. So if they go and lose to the Giants, we might not have a podcast next week because I'm going to be in New Orleans, but, you know, if the Bills lose to the Giants, I'll have more of a reason to not do the podcast next week. So, before we get out of here, we have everyone's favorite segment. It's the Hofbräuhaus update. We didn't do it last week, and then, or I think we did it, but we just like skipped over it almost. We didn't really have any updates, and we had 2 tweets about it. Like, where's the Hofbräuhaus
update? Some disgruntled fans.
It really is.
Can't
they really
were.
Everyone loves the Hofbräuhaus update, and it's sad to report that
drumroll.
There are none. Hey. I went there. I didn't go there yesterday. I was at.
Was Chile. Your German friend disappointed?
He was. I told him.
Like, there's no Hofbräuhaus here. I don't know why he's French, but.
He pronounced it Hofbräuhaus.
Hofbräuhaus.
He says Broy.
Hofbräuhaus.
Like Derek Roy.
Maybe the Buffalo way to put it is Hofbräuhaus.
Hofbräuhaus. But,
going down to Hofbräuhaus. Do they have Labatt there? They got blue?
Good.
Got any wings there?
Yeah, dude, they're gonna have wings, and it's gonna be...
Place is gonna close.
It seriously may.
It'll either be the lack of wings or the $18 beers. I'm not sure.
I just want this thing to open. I really do. I was at a Helium Comedy Club yesterday, and I saw it across cobblestone. Beautiful cobblestone. Mm. And they're working on it, but again, it doesn't look like it's anywhere near opening.
I mean, so. Do you think... I will be back in Buffalo November 2nd through the 5th. Do you think it will be open by then?
I'm going to say no.
It's tough. I think I'm going to agree with you there. 2 months does not seem like enough time for them. As long as this has been dragging out, I don't think it's going to be open.
5 years now.
I'll have to come back next fall, and hopefully it'll be open.
No, it won't be. But, what was I going to say? It's just, I think I read something that they were taking group reservations for September. But, if they open at some point in September, it's... The facade's not going to be anywhere near done. It doesn't look like it's... Like, if you look at the... To people who listen to this, who actually care about the Hofbräuhaus update... And,
they made it this far. They care about the Hofbräuhaus
update. They care about the Hofbräuhaus update. And we're giving them their money's worth this week.
They're here for the Hof. Yeah.
Look at the artist rendering. Go to HofbräuhausBuffalo.com or whatever the website is. Look at the artist rendering. And then go down to Scott Street. It's very close to the arena. It's right across from the Fairmont Creamery. People from Buffalo will know what I'm talking about. But it's right there. You can see it from the throughway, even.
Mm-hmm.
You
just it doesn't look ready.
No, it
doesn't
didn't
look
ready
anything. When I was there. When I was there, it was last winter I was around there. And it did not look ready at all. And it was supposed to be open, I think, in the spring last year. Mm-hmm. Then it got pushed to the fall. That's got to get pushed to the next fall.
They've been pushing it forever. I mean, this I've only cared about this for a few months. And
this is the new Bass Pro of our generation.
If this never opens, I will be devastated. And then also, but hey, it's going to have to open eventually, right? So we're going to need a new construction watch.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking we turn our eyes to the Skyway construction watch.
No.
Because I sent this to you and D'Lo. They released, the 16 finalists? Mm-hmm. Oh, and there were some doozies.
You made some waves on Twitter with your takeaway from it.
I went ultra
Sky
viral.
Beach.
Sky Beach, dude. That was, like, just, if you guys, the listeners, go and look at these possibilities, because there are some that make sense. There's some where it's just like, oh, yeah, the most likely, probably, if they are going to do anything with these, because I think this was just like a Cuomo-run competition, and they've spent the last 2 years fixing the Skyway and making it,
I don't think they're going to take it down.
Yeah, exactly. They've spent millions of dollars fixing it, and now, but then, like, there were a few where it's just like, oh, yeah, just, like, clean up the area underneath it and make it, like, a little park. That makes sense.
Which they already kind of have, but...
Yeah, and then there are some where it's like, okay, we're gonna make it a park. We're gonna make, like, the actual Skyway a park. There's one where it's like, okay, we're gonna build a big glass building next to it, and then we're gonna make that... We're gonna make the Skyway a hangout. Mm-hmm. But then the biggest one was Sky Beach, which...
It sounds like a drunk idea. It sounds like someone is just sitting at a bar in South Buffalo and is like, why don't they make it into a beach?
Beach. I read the whole document. There's like a 4-page PDF to go with this Sky Beach idea.
All the dimensions and the climate control of it.
Oh, and the best part is my biggest takeaway was that it's free for Buffalo residents. They are making this, they want it to be a tourist thing. Mm. And they were like, okay, 3 million people visit Niagara Falls each year. And if we can attract 10% of those, that's the $300,000 or whatever.
Anyone's going to pay $10 to go up into a Sky Beach. And when you're visiting Buffalo, you're going to be like, oh, that looks cool. And then they're going to keep driving.
And then a big part of this pitch was that Toronto is 2 hours away.
And people are gonna come from Toronto. Yeah, someone's gonna be like,
what are you on about?
Well, there's beaches here on Lake Ontario, but you know, I think I wanna go to the one that's about 400 feet in the air and climate controlled, and I gotta pay. I'm gonna go there instead. And I've gotta wait through the border crossing.
Look, it's a cool idea, but only in that it's nifty. Bizarre. I would go there once, ironically. It's tacky. It's dumb.
It would close in a year, and they'd reopen it as a skyway.
Yeah, nobody. I don't think anyone's gonna come from out of town to go to the Sky Beach. It's just, it's dumb. Oh my, dude, we're on Sky Beach Watch now. We're on Sky Beach Watch.
That is our new watch, because Hopper House, it'll eventually open, but it's a little slow in the news.
It'll open. Oh, one day. Dude, the day Hopper House opens is going to be the day the Sky Beach gets approved.
That's the day that you get a key to the city,
and that's
too.
The day that I die happily. I die of joy. Yeah. I would give anything for Hopper House to sponsor this
podcast.
They
should give the creator of Hopper House a key to the city.
They should.
Once it opens. They better do a ribbon cutting ceremony, and it better be on the news.
They're bringing in like a real German staff and everything.
That will be top story on the news that night when Hopper House opens.
It would
be. News 4 at 6, Hopper House opens. Also, there was a shooting. But Hopper House is first.
I don't even want it to be like a paid sponsorship. I just want to be able to say, welcome to the Kyle Slag Variety Hour, brought to you by Hopper House.
We just want their permission to say Hopper House on the podcast, and for them to make money and for us to make none.
Dude, if I can make them money.
And we'd be happy.
Yeah, I'll make them money, sure. As long as I get a free mug. As long as I don't have to pay $250 for a Stein.
It's pronounced a Stein. So, don't want to rub them the wrong way before we enter this partnership.
You're right. All right, Hopper House, we've entered an unconsensual partnership. Thank you so much for your support
over the months.
Yeah, for your support.
And continued support.
For your continued support, even though you're going to shut us down. All right, I think that's enough. Bills win. Bills win. 16-0.
I think I smell a cease and desist coming.
Oh, no. Dude, could they do that? Yeah. Could they take me down? I'm not seeing money from this podcast. They're not going to take me down.
I don't think they could, because we haven't implied an affiliation with them, so we're good.
But I just did. Oh, no.
Hopefully, guys, they don't hear this.
It's all a joke. I love Hopper House. Yeah. All right, we're getting out of here. Rich, where can people find you on Twitter?
On Twitter. I'm taking a break off Twitter, but they can find me on Twitter at @ByRichKowalski. If you want to find me anywhere else, I'll be in Portland, Oregon.
You can read his articles, BillsWire.com. You can read all the articles on BillsWire.USAtoday.com. Follow BillsWire on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @TheBillsWire on most of them. And then it's BillsWire on Facebook, I think. You can follow me on Twitter @KyleSelege, same way it's spelt in the podcast title. And we'll get out of here. Thanks for listening, and maybe we'll talk to you next week. We'll see. Goodbye.